Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Compton Live Show. My name is Eric Payne, also known as The Sun. It's that time at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday evening where you can catch us broadcasting live on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold. blogtalkradio.com/KThompsonLive, or you can listen to all of our episodes anytime you want because the show is in fact archived. I am the son, Eric Payne, and you are.
I am the mother of Eric Payne, and hello, everyone, and welcome to K. Thompson Live. And we're going to be talking about welfare. We're going to be talking to Joanne Schnell and about the Division of Welfare in the city of Newark, and find out all about what's happening with people coming in to take advantage of the welfare programs that they have. So, and her name is, our guest coming up is Joanne Schnell, and we will be talking to her very shortly. And we were also going to be having Wayne Gilman, who is a former news director of WLIB-BLS. So, it's cold out. Doggone it. It is really, 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 really cold.
Yeah, it's cold. That's right. It's a cold day. It's winter time. Today's the first day of winter. Today, what's in the news? We have the violence overseas, which is always the situation. Lately, the barbaric shooting of the Soviet ambassador over there in, I guess it was Turkey. I'm not quite sure where that took place. It escapes me for the moment. Just one of the many things going on. I mean, it's countdown till the president-elect, the new president-elect getting in office, the one and only, the original... Apprentice host Donald Trump is his name, and he's doing his thing, making his appointments, having his people in there, and what are you going to do? It's getting ready to happen, everybody. So, and regardless, the guy loves his Twitter, and he likes to respond to anybody that might say anything that he doesn't want, he doesn't like. I wonder what's going to happen to the check and balance system of our government. Will it really be a check and balance, or will it just be, you know, kind of rubber stamping of whatever he does? Because we know he does take issue with everybody that has a differing opinion of him. Some of the bizarre things going on. You know, it's interesting about some of the Trump supporters who are a little bit more willing to stretch the truth or not exactly... You know, even meet people halfway. I was watching one of the news shows tonight, Chris Matthews' show. Joy Reid was sitting in. And they had, I believe, gentleman Sam Stein from Huffington Post and the conservative guy, Hugh Hewitt. And Hugh Hewitt, he wanted to quote Sam Stein's article in which he incorrectly identified Sam Stein as saying some things where Sam was actually quoting an organization. And Hugh Hewitt misrepresented Sam Stein. And it was really interesting because Sam Stein stopped him and said, wait a minute, that was quoting an organization. That's what the organization said, not myself. And he said, you just got to mischaracterize me. And it wasn't the fact that Hugh Hewitt did that, because that's what a lot of them seem to do from what I've noticed. But it was the fact that he kind of just poo-pooed it. Oh, and he kind of said, oh, well, you know, you kind of didn't you agree with it, or he kind of even didn't acknowledge the fact that he got caught trying to mischaracterize the gentleman's words. So it was really, it was extremely interesting, but it's kind of par for the course when you see a lot of these supporters of Trump, Hugh Hewitt being one of the main supporters of Donald Trump, and how they all talk about, you know, when Trump tweets these wild, crazy things, they have to come back and say, well, he didn't mean that. Hugh Hewitt even said he does that to get headlines. So we're not supposed to believe what the guy says. We're just supposed to believe he's just being facetious or getting headlines. Wayne, jump in here. You've been hearing what I'm talking about. It's kind of unbelievable, right? The one and only.
I have to agree with you, Eric.
Thank you.
It's very confusing, you know, as what's going on. And, you know, I'm almost at a point, and maybe this is too early in the game, but I think at some point Donald Trump is going to make a misstep, and it may cost him the presidency. I don't know. I mean, there are just too many things that just seem to be way off the pale that he's you know, yes, he has the ability to make changes. He can get rid of all sorts of things that have been etched in stone in the past to a certain extent. But, you know, I have to agree. I mean, there are too many things that have just gone on. And his whole thing, he wants to drain the swamp. He wants to recreate a completely different system with respect to how
he wants to create a completely different swamp.
Yeah.
He wants to drain the swamp so he can fill up his old swamp.
Yeah,
he's got
exactly.
Some of the old alligator characters that he bring him back.
And the thing is,
so
all
true.
These alligator characters got money, and he feels the reason to justify their employment within his administration is because they were successful as business people. That doesn't necessarily translate to running the country or being a world leader, you know? I mean, again, we go back to this level of mediocrity on his part compared to what we are about to lose in a space of 20 days, you know? There's a standard that this country's had for years. And I just think it's like borderline sophomoric. And of course he's gotten advice from other, you know, people within the party who are trying to cozy up to him now. But you know, the fact that he wants to tweet, he still has his hand in terms of reality TV, that he's going on this victory tour around the country. I mean, victory to those who supported him, but he, you know, he says he wants to bring the nation together, but I don't see where that is bringing the nation together. To me, he has not done enough to denounce the levels of racism and the support he's received from all sorts of racist factions out here. You know? And then
he's an interesting guy. I mean, I think that you have some of the old characters cozying up, like you said, the Dick Cheney's. I saw somewhere in the news of that, and a lot of the Condoleezza Rice, oh my goodness, and some of the other people that are promoting the guy Rex Tillerson, who was the Exxon man who wants to drill in the Arctic, cozying up to them.
I
feel that trickle-down economics is probably going to come back, you know, the old kind of Reagan trickle-down economics, and just the term trickle-down, you know, is really, you know, Trump's, to me, it seems like these are a bunch of rich people going to get together, and that means they're going to make money for them, and the crumbs that fall off the table or trickle down for the rest of the country, many of them Trump supporters, you know, they'll get what they get. But it's clear that, you know, he's a little bit heavy on the kind of the influence of the very wealthy people side, except for Ben Carson, who is head of HUD, which is that's kind of the black campaign. That's the black cabinet position, right? The HUD position has always been black cabinet position. Speaking of HUD and family services and things like that, I want to get a person who I could probably call little sister or little sister of a friend. Our families have been very good friends for a long time, and your mic is open, Joanna Schnall Lux. Joanna,
hey,
are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
What's going on, little sister?
Hey, how are you? Long time no see.
Long time, man. Let's not talk about how many years that is, because I think we're both probably 2 feet shorter the last time I saw you. And I just want to welcome you. But I know you, before we get into your area of expertise, Joanna, I know you have some opinions about the president-elect. You might have heard a little bit of our conversation. What are your thoughts about the new guy?
Well, there are things I would like to say, but I don't think I'm allowed to say them on the air.
You and me.
We have an hour. You can take your time.
I'm very concerned about. Let's put it this way, mildly. I'm very, very concerned about our future. I'm very concerned about where our democracy is headed. And I am kind of filled with dread and fear right now, and I'm not quite sure how to work through that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, and everybody was just taking like that first week. A lot of people were taking that first week kind of just to digest. A lot of people that were Hillary supporters or certainly were not Trump supporters were taking it. It took me a while. and not really wanting to watch a lot of the news, because every time I see this guy making up stuff, it gets on your nerves after a minute. And I suppose that's what the Fox News viewers have been going through for the last 8 years every time they saw Barack Obama. So, but you know,
I don't know. I just feel like it's such a different dynamic, because, you know, while I'm a very big Barack Obama fan and I'm very biased towards him and his presidency, I feel like he wasn't a bald, slate-faced liar. So no matter what you can say about him, there's all kinds of things people can have problems with his policies or problems with, you know, things that he promised that didn't come true. But he didn't just get on TV and lie to people. And I guess that I have a real problem with that. You know, that's what's going on here. So.
Exactly. And I also want to introduce you to our other co-host. That's Wayne Gilman, that you also hear on the line with us, on the air with us.
How are you?
Wayne, are you there?
Yeah,
I'm here.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good evening.
Yes,
thank
we
you.
We can hear you. And
right.
This is Joanne Chanel, and she's with the Division of Welfare in Newark. And what we're going to be doing is, you know, talking to her about the division, about being a service worker, and how people feel about that. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to jump to one whole different area, you know, Joanne. Do the people on welfare coming into, you know, the office, do they express any, you know, opinions about Donald Trump? Does his being president make them nervous?
Well, I can't say that there was a lot of talk about politics, especially leading up to the election. I mean, my clients would come and ask me who I was voting for example. Of course, I can't really disclose that at my job. That's, you know, sort of a personal thing, and I'm trying to keep it professional. But many people expressed fear about their own futures regarding what would happen to them, what would happen to Medicaid, what's going to happen to, you know, their food stamps if this guy becomes president. And, you know, I think people are just, you know, trying to figure their lives out and figure out, put the really big question mark on what they, you know, what's coming for them. And it's going to come fast, I think.
That's an interesting point, because a lot of people, you know, people that rely on the government, a lot of the government services, obviously our seniors, but also people that are a lot of your clients, Joanne, also people that collect unemployment. You know, usually what happens when you have a drastic change or any change in administrations like that, it affects those people the hardest. They're the ones that are first hit. I'm speaking in particular about the change in that George W. Bush brought about, and the change in the unemployment system, where they instituted that people on unemployment, you pay unemployment taxes, it goes to unemployment insurance when you have a job, that's why you get unemployment. And then they changed the law to make it so where people that were getting unemployment checks, you would have to pay taxes on your unemployment check, so you're getting taxed twice. And that was getting people at the, you know, at their most vulnerable, or the hardest working Americans that are hit the hardest in these changes that often happen and occur during Republican administrations. And that's a very strong point, and something obviously that you're expressing, and something I've seen really as an actor living in California. You know, in between jobs, you collect unemployment. That's how you do it. And I ended up owing taxes to this day because of that slight change in the law that I didn't realize that I had to check that box off. Mm-hmm. And that was because George Bush instituted, let's make the people on unemployment pay taxes on the unemployment check when we already paid taxes to get the unemployment check. So it's those type of things that really affect the broadest cross-section of Americans.
It's true, and it can be devastating for people. Unemployment checks, I'm sure, as you know, as most of us know, or have had unemployment in the past. It's a small amount of money to have to live off, and it ends quickly. You know, it's not forever.
And also, as a family service worker with the welfare department, are a lot of people really nervous about, you know, this new president? Do they really feel it? You know, is it the changes that are coming, are they really, really very concerned about it, or does it really not mean that much to them?
Well, it's hard to kind of measure that at this point. Uh-huh. I mean, right now people are just trying to get their food stamps today. They're trying to feed their families this month, and many of them are not even thinking a month ahead. We see a lot of people coming in and registering for Medicaid, because that is something that could change quickly. And we've seen such an uptick in the number of people who qualify for Medicaid now and who are insured, and they've never been insured before. I mean, they've lived their lives uninsured, and now they have health insurance. And if that changes, that's really going to be very damaging to a lot of people.
Good Lord, no kidding. I would imagine so, come to think of it. The importance of welfare is not to be questioned. I'm telling you, the people have to, you know, have some things that they can go to. I hope that people aren't really inundated with a whole lot of negative thoughts about these changes. And those who are particularly need very, very serious assistance. And I would not like to be in a position where I would need assistance and I would be in doubt about whether I am going to get assistance or something. So how are you dealing with that? I mean, have they, you know, expressed any concerns?
Yeah, so far, you know, I haven't seen that so much. I think that, you know, what I tell people who come in and sit down and I call it my booth, my cubicle, I'm conducting an interview to see if they're eligible for benefits through the Essex County Division of Welfare. And basically what I'm there to do is to determine whether they're eligible. So there are, you know, there are rules and I have to follow them. But what I tell
Wayne,
people
do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I was just curious because one thing with Rudolph Giuliani out of the picture, seeing what he had done in the state of in the city of New York with respect to welfare recipients, I'm hopeful that he's not going to have a foothold in the Trump administration with respect to any changes going that way. But I am concerned because I also feel at the same time there's a wholesale effort to just rearrange Obamacare. I don't know if that comes under your purview or not, but you know, you mentioned Medicaid. I just recently, I'm ashamed to say that I've applied for Medicare. I'm old enough to receive it, you know.
Well,
and I have to look at my face every morning and say, you know, I'm eligible. But, you know, it's just one of those things. But I worry, you know, about what could possibly happen in the next couple of years. You know, I mean, there are a lot of people who have benefited from having the Affordable Health Care Act. And right now, I'm in New York, and I can only speak from my perspective. Our mayor in New York City, de Blasio, has launched a campaign to get as many people to sign up for the Affordable Health Care Act because he foresees that's going to be one of the vulnerable spots with the new administration. Is that something that you think folk across the country should do based on your vision? I really do.
I mean, especially, you know, because what I mean, you know, one of the things I do is register people and get people qualified for Medicaid. And that is part of the Affordable Care Act in the sense that, you know, the Medicaid has been expanded. So in New Jersey, many more people are eligible for Medicaid than were eligible before because they've expanded the guidelines of who's eligible.
Lots
of people now can get Medicaid who couldn't before. And if they can't, I always suggest to people, look, if you're not eligible for Medicaid because your income is too high, then go on the, you know, healthcare.gov website and register for Obamacare because you'll get a subsidy. Your income isn't that high and you'll be subsidized. At least you'll have health care. If it's not completely free, it's not that expensive. And so, you know, it will drastically change my job. I want
people to really hear that now. Lots of changes regarding welfare. If you are in trouble now financially and you feel that you don't know what you're going to be doing with, you know, with Trump in there, what way he's going to be going, go into your welfare worker. Go to Joanne Schnall there in Newark, right? In Newark at the welfare agency, and find out. You know, really become active in, you know, your life. And there are programs for people on welfare. And, you know, they're working very hard, we understand. And so, you know, we've got to make these, you know, these programs available to people who really need them. And I know you're doing a fantastic job there, Joanne.
I mean, you know,
as long as I've known you, I forgot your name for a minute.
Joanne Schnall.
So, well, listen, can we do this again with you?
Yes, I would love to.
Okay, all right, Joanne Schnall. I know you said that you were going to be able to have a little while. So the next time we talk to you, you know, we're going to be asking you to stay a lot longer, you know, because I want to hear what your opinions are and what your programs are and all that kind of thing, because the fact that, you know, I know that you have, if not solutions, you know, programs. Okay, and different things that you recognize that maybe some other people don't recognize.
Yeah, and also just to get the word out that these programs are available to people who are struggling, you know, that they don't have to be embarrassed to come down and apply for welfare. That's what we're here for.
Where are you located?
That's 18 Refuge.
Where are you located?
The Division of Welfare in Essex County. You have to be an Essex County resident, but it's 18 Rector Street in Newark.
Okay. All right.
I wanted to ask, Kay, if you don't mind. And again, each state is different, but are people who are receiving the support from the government that way, are they still eligible to work, or must they be unemployed? What's the criteria for that?
Well, generally, I would say that most of the people that are receiving Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is SNAP, also known as food stamps, most of those people are working. Most of those people are employed, part-time, full-time, but not earning enough money to feed their families, that type of thing. So
and
they come down for food stamps or, you know, to fill out what they can't put in their pantry. You can absolutely be working. In order to get cash assistance, like general assistance, you have to be making a very little money, like less than $150 a month.
Wow.
So mostly that's people who are either completely, like their unemployment has run out and they have no money coming in, or they're homeless or that type of thing, and then they can get cash assistance. But it is much easier to get food stamps than it is to get cash assistance. They want people to be working. They want to feed people. We want to feed people.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a punishment.
Right. Well, I guess it would be very important to put that number out again, how people can make contact with you.
Well, I only know about Essex County because that's the county that I work in. But if you're living in Essex County, New Jersey, come down to 18 Rector Street in Newark. That's the Division of Welfare. It's now called the Division of Family Benefits and Assistance. But there are, you know, divisions of welfare or social service divisions in every county. So you just need to go online and find out the address and just go down there. And everybody who's there is there for the same reason. There's no shame in it.
Gotcha.
Right. Briefly, before you go, Joanne, I just want you to give us your take, or give us the actual description, if you can, for lack of a better word. You know, there's a certain stigma attached to people that have been on welfare or that may be on welfare, and give us just, you know, the reality about, because we know the welfare system was instituted years ago, I guess by FDR or whoever, to help Americans in dire times, but so people have made it into something that it's really not, and made it a very negative thing. And it was designed to really help Americans. And can you just dispel those negative myths really briefly before you go?
Sure. I mean, the way I feel about it is that, you know, most of the people who come down are not there for a handout. People are there because they are working really hard. Some of them are working two jobs. Some of them, they're getting paid minimum wage. They don't have any benefits. and they are folks who need to feed their families, and they're working as hard as you or me or anybody else, and there's no shame to getting help when you need help. You're working, you want
right.
to feed your family, and that's a noble thing to do.
It certainly is.
I don't know.
It certainly
I guess I feel like people who come down to welfare are, you know, they're having a bad day. That's not their best day, and we know that.
What's the number that they can call, you know, to find out more information?
You know what? There's a call center, but my suggestion is to actually come down in person. There's very little that can be done over the phone.
Okay.
I believe that. There's a call-in center. I think it's 973-733-8000. And that's just a call center. But my suggestion is they can come down to 18 Rector Street and sit and talk to an interviewer.
Okay. That's some good information. Thanks, Jillian. We'll talk again,
all right,
okay?
So nice to talk to you. All right. Take care.
Listen, thanks for all the information.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks to my little sister.
Hey, nice
Take
to
care.
Talk to you again. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, that was very informative, and we appreciate Joanne giving us her input and also the good work she's doing in helping people better in their time of need. You know, she's a special person and really sees the need and stands up like a true American. That's what people do in America, that we help each other out when we need it, and we try to offer these services, and we are not divisive. We try to be united despite what some may say. So you wanted to say, Mom?
Yeah, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be putting on the address of the welfare center, the Division of Welfare, where it is on Rector Street in Newark, and that's going to be going on, you know, our site, our page on the internet, for people if they need more information, because this is some really good, solid information. You know, you may need welfare. You may not need welfare. Maybe you have the information that somebody who needs it. Maybe you have that information that you'd like to share. So this is really information that we thought about giving out today, and I'm so glad we did. So, Wayne.
Yes.
Wayne Gilman, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Oh, I thought that you had left us.
No, actually, I was trying to figure out a way I could get on welfare, but I know I couldn't be accepted, so, you know. I want somebody to take care of me real bad these days.
What's the situation there in New York with Donald Trump? I mean, you know, he's not too far from you.
I tell you, it's chaotic. Everybody has something to say. There's a lot of quiet support out there, contrary to what I really thought in the beginning. Or it's either that people are now beginning to reveal themselves after the election. But, you know, there's an uneasiness. I mean, I'm no different than you and Eric and Lisa and everybody else who's been basically analyzing some of the, you know, the stuff that's been coming off the major media outlets, and every time you turn around, there's some new discovery that perhaps we should have known prior to his election. And I just don't know what to make of the situation with Hillary. I know there were missteps. I tried to follow that Michelle Obama Oprah Winfrey interview the other night as best as I can. I thought she was excellent. You know, I mean, it's bothersome in a way, but I understand it. I wouldn't want to run for president either. You know, it's an awesome.
You're talking about when the subject came up. Oprah asked her if she would ever run for the president.
Right.
Yeah,
I
think she'd make a heck of a good president. However,
I think she can do a lot for the
Democrats. What's the name now? And
Michelle Obama.
But, you know, at the same time, who would want to put themselves through that again?
Exactly.
You know? I mean,
yeah.
that's I know that's really, you know, wishful thinking, but she would make a heck of a good president. I'm telling you. So,
oh,
but anyway.
But I'm
you know,
still
she is so bright. She
for her.
Is knowledgeable. Listen, they're both attorneys. You know,
right.
Family life, and you know. And, you know, we went down to see the White House, you know, not too long ago. I think it was about, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And it was just wonderful down there, except that they didn't have any pictures of Obama in there.
Oh, really?
You know, nothing of, you know, a portrait, because I don't think the portrait of the president, the presidential portrait, has been finished yet. But anyway, she is something. She is absolutely something. So what
yeah.
do you think?
Well, I'm, you know, all of us have this level of anticipation. It's like there's an uneasiness, and I was really curious to see how quick Trump was willing to define or assume what Michelle Obama was talking about the factor of hope. You know, I feel that she was speaking in the present tense. You know, however, Obama took it from the Trump. Took it from the perspective that she was speaking in the past tense. Yes, there was a lack of trust and hope after what we suffered through in the last so-called recession. To me, it was a depression. You know, so many people lost their jobs. Any investment that you had was not worth anything. You know, as I still say that, and I happen to agree with Congressman Payne, that at the end of the day, there should be space enough for a Barack Obama's face to be on Mount Rushmore. You know, this man has done a lot, and it's unfortunate that I don't know how long it will take before he gets his due, but I think it will be in short order compared to some of the other recent presidencies that we've gone through as a country. You know, there's been no scandal.
Yeah.
You can't say this man was not trusted. You know, people create things just to make him look bad. That whole birther movement, you know, everything that was going on just to make him look bad, you know, was a modern-day assassination attempt on my part. That's the way I look at it. I equate anything
right.
that would have happened to
a
Robert Kennedy or a yeah, you know, it.
Yeah.
I mean, all the character is that if you don't have your name, you have nothing, as you well know. So rather than take the risk of getting him out of the picture, why not disparage somebody's image, you know? And unfortunately, with Trump, it worked, you know? I still think there was some machination going on there with the Russian government or something that allowed this thing to flourish to the point where he was able to get in. I don't know about the Electoral College, I don't know whether or not if that's something that should be disbanded. I think everything should be predicated on a popular vote. This is not 1816. You know, we've gone through so many different elections since then. And it just goes to show that if people are, you know, doggedly determined to have their candidate in office, they will come out and vote, you know. I agree that I've heard some pundits say this has very much been a white vote as opposed to people coming out for Barack Obama. It, for some reason, it didn't translate, you know, to Hillary. But what is done now. I guess we have to look forward, but cautiously.
I think I agree with you, Wayne. I think we should do away with the Electoral College. But, you know, there are certain people that they like being ignorant. They like hearing just what they think and they believe, and those are people that have very antiquated, old ideas about America, those people that are still stuck into racism, those people that want to be racist or prejudiced and base all of their judgments on that and base their judgments on their romantic view of America of the old, of the old West,
right.
And America, you know, developing and pulling themselves up and, you know, battling the Indians, those savage Indians, and, you know, keep all of the ruddy, muddy people in line. You know, it's just they want that view. And when you have true equality in a diverse society, that should have always been there, you know, if you've been the one that's been on top or had the preferential citizenship, you're probably not going to like it. If you can't
exactly.
say, well, at least I'm still a white person in America, if that's your thing. And that's really the unfortunate part about it, because there's a certain amount of ignorance in that perspective, to believe that all people are based on what you might think of one particular person or stereotype you or just to be racism. And so we need to, you know, I mean, that's how they got George Bush to kind of justify W in there a little bit. You know, people pointed out that he was a C student, that he didn't show up for his National Guard service. You know, they, all of a sudden they made it okay for someone to be a C student. They said, what's wrong with it?
Right.
What's wrong with somebody being a C student? You know, so the evil geniuses that work within their party that are able to spin all of these things, it goes against, and these people, a lot of these people are ignorant. I'm not ignorant, they're unintelligent to the facts and really what's going on in the world. And a lot of people, I've heard the notion of, well, you know, we have good old-fashioned country, good old-fashioned common sense, and that's true. But good old-fashioned common sense should tell you not to judge a book by its cover. It should tell you not to judge everybody based on the actions of one. But there are a lot of people that claim this good old-fashioned common sense or country folk common sense or are country folk with a certain way of thinking, which is bass-ackwards, if you don't mind the way my phraseology.
I hear that, yeah.
And now, in this time and where we are in history, it's time for everybody to be aware of the facts. It's time for everybody to step up and do your homework a little bit and understand who you're voting for. That includes everybody across the board, Democrat, Republican. I've heard some people shortly before the election, I saw two young black people, a young guy and a young girl. The girl said she didn't know who to vote for, Trump or Hillary, which was unbelievable. The guy said he wasn't even going to vote because they're both liars. And people don't understand that if you look at the history in this country, and I always say that, people died for the right to vote. And you, you don't have the right. You owe it to those people that struggled, particularly African Americans, that didn't have the right to vote. In my grandmother's, in my mother's time, well, you were born and whenever you were born there, Mom, and you probably didn't have the right to vote when you were 10 years old, right? Black people didn't have the right to vote then.
When I was 10 years old, I couldn't vote anyway.
But I'm saying black people didn't have the right to vote. So
yes, black people did. I guess.
When you were 10 years old, black people had the right to vote?
Sure. Are you kidding? How old do you think I am?
Well, black people, we got the Voting Rights Act was passed in what, 60s? When did black people get the right to vote?
I don't know, but I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, that is a trivia question. I know.
Right.
I believe, well, if not in my mother's lifetime, certainly in my grandmother, my grandparents' lifetime,
well,
there was a time,
was
I believe, when they could not.
It was. I'm sorry, Eric.
Wasn't that long
ago,
never, right?
It wasn't a level playing field. You know, there were some parts of the country in which, you know, the rights were denied. I mean, the eligibility was there, but still, you know, we were still going through that whole civil rights Jim Crow nonsense that some parts of the country in the mid-1960s, 1964, you know, that Johnson was able to come out and sat there with King to make sure that everybody had that right regardless, you know?
Right.
And it's just unfortunate that, you know, what goes on. I mean, it bothers me to think that I feel in some instances, seeing what occurred in some places like North Carolina, in Michigan, and other states around the country, people are still being denied. They're still finding a way in which to, you know, reduce the significance of what people struggle for, what people protested and died for, you know? So you're absolutely right, you know? It wasn't that long ago.
And to have them, I mean, really, people get so caught up in the nonsense and the distractions that we have in life. And you know, just even the course of the election, right? I am so very surprised and really appalled how the debate system was going, right? Because first, Donald Trump didn't want to debate. He wasn't going to show up for the debates. Why? Because in a debate, traditionally, you get revealed of what you really know and whether you're really telling the truth or not. And how they decided, someone in a very genius, evil genius move, made it possible for the debate moderator not to be a fact checker. And as long as I've been following presidential debates and things like that, I thought that was the job of the moderator, to be the one
exactly.
who stops the lies and calls the candidates out on when they're stretching the truth. And somehow, they were able to do that magic trick to make people say, well, we don't want the moderator being a fact checker. Now,
who did they want?
They just wanted Trump and those guys just to be able to go at it and talk, I guess, argue, whatever. I guess that makes good TV. But and the guy lies, period. I mean, he lies on the regular, you know, just make up stuff. And that's why he prefers Twitter as opposed to doing interviews. That's why he wants to go on this little victory thank you tour, because the adulation of a crowd cheering for you is much better than having to hold a press conference, you know, so and having someone be adversarial with you. So, you know, that was the media kind of fell in line. Okay, we don't want to be the fact checker unless he just wore him down. He's like, he tells so many lies, we don't have time to fact check them all, you know. So I think it was, you know, there was some evil genius behind them. I think Kelly Conway probably would be that person with certainly the Bannon guy, a real, let's give him an evil
oh,
genius.
Please. Yeah.
But they changed the narrative to make Hillary to be the one that is somehow less trustworthy when this guy, 2 days after he was elected, had a lawsuit that he settled for $25 million.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
It's unbelievable. Do we still have you, Wayne?
Yeah, I'm still here. I mean, it is unbelievable. I mean, the fact of the matter is that here's a guy that campaigned on the basis of having this notion of having Hillary Clinton locked up for whatever egregious perceived acts she did with emails, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And no sooner did he get the nod, all of a sudden that became unimportant. It wasn't something that was worthy of weight. You know, he felt that all the beating up he did during the course of the campaign was enough punishment for her to take, and that was it. My thing is, has there been anything that he said that he's actually followed up on, planned to do? I mean, as far as getting people jobs in the Midwest, working for, I forgot the name of the company. You know, even that turned out to be a crooked publicity stunt. Carrie.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, he said 1,100. The guy said the number was closer to 700. I mean, 300.
Exactly.
He flubbed on a 300, 350, whatever.
Right.
I'm not really that mad, because that's what they do all the time. You round it up, so what? But the issue that he took with the union work, and when he started really going in on them on Twitter, he's not a union, good union guy and all that. You know, to have a president that basically is the type that would have an enemy list a la Richard Nixon, because that's what Donald Trump seems like he would have, an enemy list. Because the way he responds to any type of criticism about anything he does. And that's, you know, criticism comes with the territory of being an elected official.
I'm glad you pointed that out, Eric, because as I said at the outset of this interview, the show today, that I think at some point Trump may be impeached. So he should take out the playbook of Richard Nixon. And look and examine every facet of what he did 40 years ago and see how that may be applicable to what he's doing today. Because he was impeached.
Say again, you're kind of breaking up a little bit there, Wayne.
Yeah, now what I was saying is that I think Donald Trump has done so many things thus far with the selection of cabinet members, promises that he intends to keep, things that he intends to do, that at some point the country's going to be fed up with a lot of the missteps and things that are going on with respect to change and what it may do to the economy and as far as our own global security, that in some instances he is no different than Richard Nixon, you know. And Nixon had also had not tough skin, but you know, he was very sensitive to just about any sort of criticism he'd face. And the same way he was impeached 40-some-odd years ago, history has a way of repeating itself in strange ways. And I'm just saying, if I were Donald Trump, I would examine Nixon's playbook, you know, scrutinize it as best as possible, because he's not beyond the point where he may not, he may be in a position where exactly he may lose his position as the commander-in-chief over the nonsense he's done so far.
Yeah, and I almost wonder if that's something that he's looking to make happen.
Sometimes I think that he's making, you know? Yeah.
Because some of the things, you know, it seems like he's really pushing the envelope. He even said he wants to continue being executive producer of the TV show The Apprentice.
Exactly.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no rule against it. I mean, he's going like by the letter of the law, I mean, for stuff that he wants, you know, and then he'll stretch the law, push the law as much as he can. But, you know, I don't think he's much different than a lot of these very extremely wealthy people who are kind of at the higher echelon of our society, who are kind of pulling the strings behind the scenes. And maybe they just let him get in a little bit. I will wait. I'll be surprised, or it'll be interesting to see when that day comes that he does things so badly or has turned people off so much that he even turns off his base that voted for him based on the fact that he was appealing to that nationalistic kind of white power movement or feeling, even though he'll say he wasn't appealing to that. That's what they were doing. And a lot of those people, even in their racism, they at least pride themselves on being working class and working hard for America and this and that. So I wonder when his policies will get to the point where they're so bad for those type of people that it supersedes their loyalty to his nationalist cry, you know, like, let's make white people on top again, and they get to the point where, like, yeah, that's not even good enough because you're not even helping the white working class, you know? And
yeah.
As he hurts all of the working class, of course, the white working class will be hurt too. And so I'm wondering, you know, when is that breaking point for them, you know?
Well,
when does it get to the point where later for us being, all of us being back on top or having this image of being back on top, he's not really doing the things that he said he can do, and we voted against our own self-interest because of our hatred, some of them, not all of you Trump supporters. And
yeah.
That doesn't become enough. You know, when does that not become enough anymore, and they have to start thinking about their self-interest and their ability to put food on the table for their families? For example, coal miners. What happens, you know, if he decides, well, the coal industry, we need to cut back on it, because a lot of those people voted for him. And Hillary
yeah.
went into it the wrong way, talking about we're going to get rid of all the coal mining jobs or whatever idiotic statement she said. You know, I mean, sometimes Democrats, we don't help ourselves. You know, you don't go to a constituency or you don't run for office and say we're going to get rid of a whole industry where people are depending on these jobs to support their families. And it's been generational. You know, so
yeah.
I think sometimes they call Bill Clinton meeting with Attorney General the week before the election, getting on the plane or saying Obamacare is a crazy system
exactly.
a week before the election. These guys don't hurt them. They don't help themselves. They didn't really help the campaign.
Exactly.
You know, and as a result, here we are. You know, we all jumped behind her and didn't jump behind Bernie. Maybe Bernie could have, you know, I got a feeling that Bernie might have ended up beating him.
I'm beginning to feel that way, but I was not totally enamored of what he was attempting to do. And I think the Democrats should have reined him in at some point. I mean, we can analyze this till the cows come home. I mean, the bottom line is that she won the popular vote, but a lot of us did not come out to show the support. And with respect to what you're saying with the his current popularity now, Trump, every president hits a low point where the poll numbers are just not out there. So what are you going to do when that happens? Are you going to stage a victory tour to talk about how America is great again when your poll numbers are down? Well, I mean, it's like there's something extremely, I would say, borderline, I don't want to even use the word bipolar, you know, there's something wrong with him.
Are you talking about Trump?
Yeah.
Are you talking about Trump?
Yes, I am. I mean, and maybe somebody would.
Who else?
You know, I mean, I can't think of there's obviously a medical term that I feel that would fit the description of what it is that he is so dependent on the adulation and the roar of the crowd and the. You know, it's beyond narcissism. You know, it's beyond Frankie Crocker for those who understand what I'm talking about. You know,
leave Frankie alone.
Yeah, I know. God
He's
rest.
Floating.
Him. Yeah. It's beyond Mike Tyson, who thought he was. You know, I mean, even Muhammad Ali. Even Muhammad Ali was able to back up his stuff, you know. I just, you know,
yeah.
I don't know what to say about Trump.
Boy. Well, we'll soon find out. You know, and
yeah.
it's really depressing to have to even think in terms of, you know, Trump as president. He is. He's president. Now what? What's going to happen?
Exactly.
So I don't know. You don't know, a lot of people don't know. But anyway, we'll be watching very carefully. And, of course, we will be demonstrating and talking and on the air and, you know, making sure that people get the information that we may have and that they don't have. So, you know, really, it's amazing, you know, to have someone like a Donald Trump as president of the United States of America. That is, that's unreal.
It is.
I can't really perceive of it, really.
Well,
so, and the things that he said about women, you know, and what he was saying with Billy, what's his name? I mean, it's, you know, jeez. Anyway, Wayne.
Well,
yeah,
what we can do is fasten our seatbelts and hope for the best.
Yeah, I just want to talk about, what, Ma?
I was talking about what you had there about Bill Riley.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up, Wayne, I don't know if you're familiar with this this statement that Bill O'Reilly just said the other day. Last night, they were talking about earlier on one of the TV shows today. And Bill O'Reilly, as Bill O'Reilly is wont to say, he said that the effort to abolish the Electoral College is an attempt by the left to take power away from the white establishment.
What?
And he said the left wants power taken away from the white establishment, and they want a profound change in the way America is run. It's one of the things he said. Taking voting power away from the white precincts is the quickest way to do that. And this was a rant that he went on. And he said that the left sees white privilege in America as an oppressive force that must be done away with. Therefore, white working class voters must be marginalized. And what better way to do that than to center the voting power in the cities? He was talking about a lot of the voting power and a lot of the minority areas, a lot of the big cities being where they want the power to go. And it's just typical O'Reilly, in my perspective, you know, when he was talking about why people want to do away with the
Electoral College.
And he'll be, I guess he'll be emboldened to really come out, especially for a guy who's kind of just a blowhard, Bill O'Reilly.
Very much like Trump.
And he's a Trump type of guy. He probably has less class than Donald Trump, if that's possible. But it's just interesting, you know. How really base that they're going, you know? And it's unbelievable that he would actually even say that out loud, because that was like bordering on kind of like, you know, old 60s George Wallace type of speech.
Racism.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean,
we've heard Bill Riley over the years, Wayne. You know, Darnwell is a racist. Always has been.
Oh, yeah, he is. I had a little problem with him over an incident involving Kobe Bryant. We were both on the air at the time, Kay. And and I knew he always had the last word. He had asked me to come down to the studio, and I just basically voiced my opinion on the air on WLIB at the time. It made the paper.
Uh-huh.
But the bottom line is that O'Reilly only sees things his way. It's narrow vision, you know? And it's amazing that he still has the kind of popularity the way he does. And he calls himself, he fashions himself as a bit of a historian now. But I really question some of the things that he's written about, you know, and it's all from his perspective anyway. And that's it. But I just saw what Eric was talking about on the wire here. And it just amazes me that, you know, he could get away with that. And I gather it's just to stimulate talk and to draw in a certain viewership that he keeps massaged, you know, over the years to keep his ratings the way they are. And obviously they tend to support him, you know. And,
we're talking to a group that want to hear what he has to say, and they agree 100% with him. And that's the issue. The same thing with the people that watch MSNBC all the time, that they say the thing you have no, you know, you got to watch the other side, at least listen to the points that the other side, the issues that the other side has, I believe. And not in an adversarial way, but just to listen to see where somebody's coming from that has a different point of view. And I've tried to watch Fox a couple of times. So let me see what they're talking about over here, at least. But you get the sense, more so than I've seen on MSNBC, which is, being a Democrat, that's the channel I watch.
Yeah.
But it seemed that every kind of reporting of the news or commentary was slanted against something, and it was more pro something, as opposed to getting a straight revealing of the facts, talking about the facts. It's talking about the facts in a slanted way with a certain opinion about the facts. And not just O'Reilly, the whole kind of Fox network when I've tried to watch that. You know, because we should be open to the other side's point of view. America is a big place and a lot of us are here together. So we should be at least willing to listen and try to understand where somebody's coming from, unless they're coming from a complete position of hate. And obviously, that's not only what a lot of that side has done, but it's also what their elected officials have done when they made the pact not to give Barack Obama any victories when they made that pact the day he got inaugurated.
Exactly.
Let's not give him any victories at all.
Right.
That wasn't
rising
to the occasion and doing what was good for the country. That was doing what's good for your party. More importantly, that was doing what's good for your little group of people that look just like you, because we know there was a bit of racism in that whole kind of conspiratorial meeting that they all had at that luncheon. And there's about those 12 or 15 guys. I saw one of the news stories that they talked about these individuals. So people have to try and get beyond. I've heard on MSNBC, I've been critical of how they couched stories, you know, and when you see a news clip and then you hear someone try to describe the news clip, certain words, you guys know this, certain descriptive words they used that didn't really apply, you know.
Yeah.
And they said, well, the president was quite enraged. And if you actually saw the clip, he might not have been enraged, you know. And so sometimes the reporters can color the incident, obviously, as you guys know, in terms of, and slant and lead the viewing public in the way they want to lead them. And if you don't watch the thing for yourself and learn the issues for yourself, you'll let the people who are reporting the news tell you what's going on. But we got 90 seconds. Wayne, you want to give us your
I just happen to agree with you, Eric. I mean, you get to the point where you kind of question whether if there's really any genuine news, because you hear so much about fake news that the lines are being blurred now on both sides, you know? So we have to really take a meticulous look at what it is that we're reading and digesting and how we interpret what it is that we read and digest.
That's true. Well, we're about out of time right now. So our co-host over there anchoring it down New York for us, Mr. Wayne Gilman, as always, it's been a pleasure, sir.
Same here. Pleasure's all mine, as they say.
Okay, well, we will see you again next week, Mr. Gilman, legendary newsman.
Okay, thank this you. Is Kate Thomas Live.
Thank you, Wayne.
all the best.
Thank you, Wayne. My mom wanted to sign off a little bit too soon. We got to give you your grand sign-off. Hold on.
Nope.
All right, thanks, Wayne. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. This has been the Kate Thompson Live Show. On the Kate Thompson Live, you can listen to Kate Thompson Live on the Blog Talk Radio Network. And my mom has walked out the room. She has signed off. You can listen to the show every week 8 to 9 p.m., or you can listen to the archives anytime you want. Thanks for listening to Kate Thompson Live Show. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.